France leading by a single point, 13-12. Back with Henderson. Henderson gets over the 10-metre line. Jack McGrath helping in the clean-out. Available for Murray. Moves it back there now towards CJ Stander. CJ Stander under pressure, but it's Ireland to have control of it. Midway between the France 22 and the 10-metre line. Sexton with the attempt to drop a goal. From outside the 22. Going towards the post. It's gone towards the post. It's over. Ireland with the drop and goal. It's gone between the posts. The drop. The ball has gone. The fellas are literally on top of each other, away to the left hand side. France have been absolutely destroyed with the final kick of the game. A drop and goal. France have been robbed of victory. 82, 83 minutes gone. At the Stade de France, the place has gone mad.
Evelyn O'Rourke is on the line. Evelyn, as I say, you are out there ahead of Storm Emma. Where are you?
Well, Sean, I am reporting live to you from outside Super Value up here in Ballaty, and it is freezing cold and the shop is getting busier and busier and busier. And I've spent the morning here talking to shoppers, because in this store, like so many other stores across the country, they ran out of bread here yesterday afternoon by 3 o'clock. So they've doubled their orders, they've added to their orders, and the shelves are replenished. But yes, I have to say it's particularly busy now at this point with people stocking up.
I think we should step out of the chip van for a minute and say hello to some real human beings. I'm very lonely in there. You know, it's only so much you can do talking to yourself. We are, if you're joining us, live from Roundstone in Connemara, and we will be here till 10 o'clock, which is to say for the next 6 or 7 minutes. Here's Sharon. Now, Sharon, you said hello to me this morning because I dragged your poor baby, Caitlin, out of her pram to do a photograph because I love babies. And we put pictures up, and you can see that gorgeous child on whatever, Facebook. And you said to me as we were finishing our chat, she's a very special child, which I always think means something happened or something different went on in your world. And you told me something that was of interest to me. So that's why I'm out here asking you about what happened that changed your life, and tell me about the shock you got. You were feeling a little unwell one day, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
The 4th of August, 2017, I woke up in the morning and was a little bit under the weather, went to the doctor here in Roundstone when I found out I was pregnant.
You didn't know you were pregnant?
Not at all.
And the doctor told you, listen, I have a little bit of news for you.
Correct.
And he said what then?
So I done a pregnancy test, and obviously I was pregnant.
There and then?
There and then. And so they said the baby may not be alive, so we have to go to Galway. So waited for the ambulance to come out from Galway, back into Galway, arrived there at 2 minutes past 2, and gave birth at 28 minutes past
two. When did
two.
You find out you were pregnant?
That morning.
And you had...
Shock!
Wait a... Is that not the maddest... What... Let's go back 9 months or
That's
thereabouts.
Okay.
I don't need to go to the specific
That's all right.
day.
Yeah.
But I'd love to know, say, 4 or 5 months in, did you not think anything was
no,
shaking?
No, not at all. No, no. Everything was as normal. Everything for a woman was as normal. No morning sickness, nothing. I'm a hotel manager in Clifton, the Alcock and Brown. I worked till the night before. I mean, I'd done a catering event of 250 people, lifted kegs, as you do, was on the bog, everything.
Yeah, what a great heckle, not the toilet, we should explain. That was a turf bog.
That's correct,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, I thought you were getting into a level of detail that no one really needed at this point.
No.
We look up from our spreadsheet or status report or from underneath the bonnet of the car and think maybe we might like to learn or do something new, to press pause on the unmissable Netflix series and go out, take a class in something or go to a play. Don't try and stop me, I'm going to go to a play. And tomorrow, after a dose of culture, you'll wake up with that lovely feeling of having gone to something. Culture night, it'll make you feel smug, it'll make you feel good about yourself. It's the hummus, it's the avocado, it's the LK's immunitas, it's the breakfast roll for the soul. Thank you very much.
Paul Regan, comedian and broadcaster, and Colm is a regular contributor to Drive Time on RT Radio 1. You can listen back to his material, which is podcast on the Drive Time website. What do you get if you take four young men from County Cavan and they get them to play music together from their teenage years. Well, if those four men, young men, are called Josh, Ross, Evan and Pete, you get the stripes.
And I said, you know, I just want to share a story that my daughter and I we're just talking. And she's new in her career. She actually graduated from Trinity, so we got to visit Ireland a lot in those years. But she and I were talking, and I told her I was going on this panel. And I said, you know, I really want to think about what I'm going to say, because I don't think I want to wallow in all the stories of, you know, what happened over those years. I think we've heard a lot of those stories. What I want to do is be part of the change and to show that things are changing. And she said, well, you know, Mom, I don't laugh at inappropriate jokes at work. And I said, you don't? And I felt guilty for even saying that, because I thought to myself, I always laughed. I laughed at all the jokes because I thought I had to. And I don't know that I would be where I am today if I didn't. I just kind of rolled with the punches. That's, you know, there's one of those jokes came up, I laughed. And so all these emotions were going through me at once. One, I felt a little complicit for laughing. Maybe I shouldn't have. Here my daughter is telling me she doesn't laugh. And I said, you know, how did you know not to do that? And she said, well, Mom, I learned that from you. And I was stunned, and I realized she was talking about my 50-year-old self, not my 25-year-old self, and because my 25-year-old self always laughed. And she said, you'd never laugh at jokes. And I said, yeah, you're right, you're right. Yeah, I don't laugh at the jokes, because that was true. I don't laugh at those jokes now. But the fact that this next generation, and she said none of my friends do either, are not laughing, that means the environment is changing, and there's not an acceptance of that.
That's Tom. He was very fond of his county. Now, we got an email in from Johnny Kelly about his sister, Vicky Phelan. I'll read it to you. And we have Vicky here in studio. How are you doing, Vicky?
I'm great, Ray. Thanks very much.
I'll read this and then we'll chat to you. Hi, Ray. I'm writing to you in hope that you could do me a huge favour and bring the plight of my eldest sister to your listeners. Her name is Vicky Phelan. She is 43 years old and the mother to two amazing children. In 2014, Vicky was diagnosed with cervical cancer. She underwent 5 weeks of aggressive chemotherapy and radiation treatment. This resulted in her being cancer-free for almost 3 years. Sadly for Vicky, she received terrible news back in November 2017 when a routine scan revealed her cancer had returned in her lymph nodes, including a mass close to her aorta, which is inoperable. Vicky has basically been offered palliative treatment, 12 months with chemotherapy or 6 months without. I would just like you to know that Vicky is a fighter and always has been. Vicky has battled through several things in her lifetime, of which I won't get into at this moment in time. Vicky has done her research on this, and there is a trial in Maryland, USA, that she hopes to get into. Amazing work has been done in the treatment of cancer and all diseases. If she was successful in this, the cost of her care will probably run into hundreds of thousands. And this is where I hope your listeners can help. I've attached a link to Vicky's GoFundMe page. I love my sister dearly, as do all my family and her friends, and of course her two beautiful children. They above all need their mammy. I hope I get to hear this, Johnny Kelly. Lot of love there from your little
lot
brother.
Of love, yeah.
Your little brother.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we start? Cervical cancer diagnosis back in 2014. And the outcomes can be quite good, can't they?
They can if it's caught early.
Yeah, right.
In my case, even though I was diagnosed with early stage, kind of stage one cancer, unfortunately, when I had a PET scan after the original diagnosis, it found that it had spread to lymph nodes.
I can't sleep at night even. I wake at 3 o'clock, maybe 4 o'clock every morning. And what do I do? I pray first of all, and then I cry. Oh, Jesus, this is terrible, Joe.
Okay.
I mean, to say we've been separated for the first time in our lives after 63 long years of marriage. Oh, God. I can't explain, but yeah, there's times in the daytime I feel as if my head was going to burst. I get that feeling, and then I try to switch off. I can't do it. The fact is, we just love each other. And again, I can't help my emotions. They're with me all day. They're with me all night. It's a nightmare for me. And it's a nightmare, I'm sure, for my lovely wife. Oh, God, it's terrible, Joe. Joe, did I ever think, did I ever think for one moment, we were loyal citizens, both of us, all our lives. And it's terrible to think that the same country has led us into this situation.
I was trying to think how to describe it. You know, when parents are very proud when their two-year-old comes downstairs and they've managed to put their socks on for the first time.
Yeah.
Well, with the onset of dementia, you're unlearning step by step the things that you knew. So it could be, you know, where to put things that you always knew where they were. Like, I remember looking for the egg slicer one day and found it in the biscuit tin. Now, there was no reason why it was in the biscuit tin, but there it was. And then dressing and undressing, and then as it progresses, you know, the bathroom, the showering, the concentration. I began to notice that if I thought Brian was reading, the bookmark was still in the same place all the time. So the concentration was going. And so the last 3 or 4 years, you can see the difference. But he still enjoys good health, and we can do things. And we, one of the things we took up, Marion, and it, and some of your listeners might be interested, there's a wonderful choir called the Forget Me Nots, and it's dementia friendly. They call it dementia friendly. Started by two sisters whose mother had dementia, and they were in an ordinary choir singing, and they started this choir, and we meet every Tuesday in Baldoyle Community Centre, and it's wonderful, and I love it. Brian was a lovely singer, still is, and we sing the old songs so he doesn't have to learn new ones, and we have a cup of tea, and there's people with dementia, there's people come in from the local nursing homes, and we all sing and we really enjoy it. And it's sort of, you realise when people say music is a very good way of keeping people in touch, it certainly is.
He recalled the excitement, the spontaneity, the lack of planning, the challenges of life on the road, and one particular piece which from the beginning invariably lit up the audience.
I remember when we were doing the recording, we knew ourselves that this was a sort of pivotal moment, I suppose. And it was borne out when we played it live on stage. Any time, the audience, of course, got, you know, had got to know the particular tune, song and tune, and they always rose to the occasion when it turned into Thurdom the Love.
And here's the pivotal moment again. Spot how the Raggle Taggle Gypsy tune morphs into Thurdom the Love. And on Arena's tribute to Liam O'Flynn when he died, Philip King recalled the shock of recognition in a Cork audience in 1972 when they heard that music.
This band, Planksty, came onto the stage and they opened with the Raggle Taggle Gypsy, and then that famous segue into Thurdom the Love. And everybody's hands sort of almost metaphorically went up in the air and said, "That is ours."
The next thing we seen was a red light appearing. And it was, as far as we were concerned, it was an army checkpoint. So Bob Walker rolled down the window and reached for his driving license for identification. And this guy at the window, he was so cross, so agitated. and he wasn't interested in Bob's licence. He just shouted, "Everybody out, everybody out." And we got out. It was the most natural thing in the world, we thought, because of what happened to Reavy Brothers the night before. And once we were out, this guy, the same guy, told us to put our hands facing the minibus with our hands on top of the minibus. And the next thing he said was, "Who's the Catholic?" There's only one Catholic on board the minibus, Richard Hughes. And Richard told me later that Reggie and Walter Chapman, when they heard that, they put their hands on top of Richard's to not identify himself, because we started to think there's something fishy here. Mm. So he kept shouting, "Who's the Catholic? Who's the Catholic?" And nobody moved, nobody said anything. And the next thing, a gunman came out of, there was about 11, 12 gunmen. The next thing, one of the gunmen went forward and pulled Richard out by the shoulder and told him to run down the road. And Richard said, "Which way will I run? You know, back towards King's Mills Crossroads or towards Bessbrook?" And there's only one gunman who ever spoke, and he said, "Run down the effing road." So they pulled Richard out, and Richard started to run down the road, and we were getting very uneasy at this stage. And Richard had left a gap where he was standing, and the gunman then said, "Close up, close up." So, of course, we closed up in the gap that was left by Richard. And the next thing the gunman said was, "Right." And the noise of the gunfire was deafening. It's something I'll never, ever forget. And what they'd done, they'd shot us all at waist level, supposed to stop anyone from running away. And that lasted maybe 10 seconds. And the next thing, I was hit multiple times, and so was everyone else. But it was absolutely awful, because there were screams of pain. There was some of them weren't able to scream, and they were moaning, they were groaning. My 19-year-old apprentice, he fell across my legs. And it was absolutely horrific. He was calling for his mommy. "Mommy, mommy, mommy." And the next thing, the gunfire stopped, and the same guy that had done all the talking said, "Finish them off." And the shooting became more measured. And Robert was still calling for his mummy. And I seen the boots of the gunman, and I seen the tips of the rifle, and they blew his face away.
The farm was small, partially surrounded by a single-gauge railway line. The grass was rough with herbs and weeds, hedges untrimmed, cattle tracks to a drinking place, stones lying sideways, an untidy scatter. The Sligo train appeared, and as it made its half circle around the fields, my son ran after it, excited. Untidy or not, in my book, the farm complied with the terms of the scheme. The farmer certainly wasn't profit greedy. We returned to the car and were about to leave when along the bumpy laneway he arrived. He jumped from the tractor. "Why didn't you tell me you were coming?" He had an unsteady gaze. He reached into a pocket, pulled out a £20 note. "Here, here, take this. It's okay, your land is in order." He appeared more surprised at this than if I told him I was fining him. The department man was always bad news. What? Take it. "I can't." I dodged his outstretched hand. He grabbed my son, stuffed the money in his pocket. I had to pull it out and hand it back to him. He was getting angry now. this gangly man in a frayed Sunday suit. "You're a disgrace if you don't take it for the child," he said. He lifted a rock from the side of the ditch, placed the banknote on the ground in front of the car and placed the rock on top of it. "If I had a child, I'd give it to him and everything else I have." He swept an arm around to show what he had. That moment, as if an occluded sun suddenly beamed, the pocket of land in the tuck of the railway line transformed before me into a child's paradise, bequest of an environmentally friendly giant.
Roach staying at the front and Roach just watching, making sure that no rider is going to attack on this final climb.
He attacked maybe 150 metres out. There was a little bit of, you know, just looking at each other who was going to make the sprint 150, 200 metres out, and he just attacked.
Straight away I thought, OK, well, if I go down the inside as the gap's getting closed, if I get through barely and I might get a little gap, that's the option I chose. I went down the inside on the left-hand side as the gap was getting closer. And got through the gap, squeezed my elbows in and got through the gap, just about got through.
Roach has made the goal for line. Oh my goodness me, Stephen Roach has gone. If this happens, Stephen Roach could be the winner of this race, the Tour de France, Tour of Italy.
I surprised Van Vliet and Sorensen and Goltz. They looked at each other for a couple of seconds and I was, by this time I'm moving away from them. And this is impossible. Like, I'm going to win this thing, you know. It's amazing. I'm very, very tired. I can feel him closing down and the line's not coming. I'm, like, I'm watching the line there and sprinting and sprinting and sprinting. I'm thinking I'm going really, really fast, but the line's coming very, very slow. So to my great surprise, then I crossed the line first.
Can it be possible? The only man who's ever done this in the world before is Eddie Merckx, and now it's going to be the World Championship for Stephen Roach, is the champion of the world.
Yes, the top story is that Independent News and Media, publisher of the Indo, the Sindo, the Herald, the Sunday World and part owner of the Star, appears to have hacked itself. It's front page news everywhere, except, of course, in the ironically titled Irish Independent. I&M's biggest shareholder is Dennis O'Brien. Wow, the lawyers didn't bleep it out like they normally do. But it's important for me to point out at this stage that there's no suggestion O'Brien had any hand, act or part in the alleged data breach. Ah, I see there's been an update to the lawyer's software. Anyway, Mr. O'Brien's reputation is impeccable, notwithstanding the Moriarty Tribunal, which found he had given alleged money to Michael alleged Lowry. Oh dear, the lawyer's new software has gone haywire. Stupid alleged lawyers. Anyway, back to the main story. The chairman of I&M, Leslie Buckley, who may sound like a rose of Tralee, but is in fact one of Mr. O'Brien's closest confidants. Mr. Buckley, without telling his board, allegedly ordered I&M's email backups to be sent to a company called Trusted Data Solutions, which is the name of a company I definitely wouldn't trust with my data. Allegedly. Supposedly to find ways to save money, but a list of names has emerged that his company was told to allegedly trawl for. It's important to reiterate again that Mr. O'Brien has no hand, act or part in it, despite another of his companies mysteriously allegedly paying for the invoice from Trusted Data Solutions. The list of names included journalists like Sam Smith, who has long been a thorn in the side of O'Brien, and Brendan O'Connor. O'Connor is a journalist and alleged television presenter. Text messages from the man running the search to Leslie Buckley have emerged, saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, LOL, we have 40,000 emails from the former CEO going back to 1999. Totes radical, dudes. Yes, they've data going back so long that Gabo was still host of The Late Late and Cork were still good at hurling. Des Cahill told me to say that last bit.
Such a bother waiting for buses. Only the car is in with Dave. I think it's on its last legs. You know Dave, of Dave and Jean fame. Live over near Tesco's. He's the mechanic and the demon barbecuer. And she's, well, Jean is just lovely. Actually, Jean was meant to give me a lift in, but there was a bit of a mix-up.
For God's sake, Mark, don't be bothering Jean again for a lift.
And so here I am, left to the mercy of the public transport system. Here we go. I just hope I've got the right fare. You know what these bus drivers are like. Olive has been a bit unlucky recently. Although I did feel a tad guilty about my own part in her downfall, so to speak. Well, I mean, we were late for Dave and Jean's party, you see. She was upstairs for ages, as usual, doing whatever it is that women do. Olive, hurry up or we'll be late.
I'm coming. Now, heels or pumps?
What?
Heels or pumps with this dress?
I don't know. Heels.
Or the slingbacks.
Olive.
Oh, relax.
An impossible woman. So, I'm in the kitchen having a nice cup of tea when she takes a tumble down the stairs in her high heels. Ends up with one of her legs stuck through the balustrades.
Mark!
I did hear her calling out.
I think I've broken my leg.
But, you know, she kept me waiting. So I took my time. Of course, I didn't realise quite how serious her predicament was.
Jesus Christ, what were you doing? Ow!
Okay, okay, I have you now. Careful.
Oh!
Pulled her free eventually. But at that stage, her ankle was about the size of a small watermelon.
You and your bloody heels.
And, of course, it's all my fault. I mean, I couldn't care less if she wore her slippers to the party. I didn't force her to wear anything. Only, well, I do like a heel on a woman. It sets off their ankles just lovely. And she always had good pins, my Olive, so she did. Well, not anymore, I'm afraid. Down to just the one now.
But back to this evening now, and tonight's bumper St. Patrick's Day gala, Cayley House, comes live from the National Opera House in Wexford. Shokuing Farran T, Kieran Hanrahan.
Joe Canning, socks down around the ankles. He's inside his own 45-metre line, just to the right of the posts. He's way, way out. He's dropping this ball in. He's dropping a little bit short. Tipperary have it. Derek Gleeson had to dive. He only saw it at the last second. Oh, what a save by Gleeson. And the ball is cleared out the field. Gathering it here is Johnny Cohen. And Galway put the pressure on. The league and Leinster champions want that place. Back to Joe Canning in front of the Cusick stand. He hits it in. He's under pressure. The umpire is going for the white flag.
Unbelievable!
What a point! Galway 22 points.
Take Tipperary